Hello, sports fans, and welcome to another edition of Yesterday Sports on the Sports History Network. And make sure to check out sportshistorynetwork.com/giveaways. I have two signed books I'm giving away. One is titled No Nonsense, Old School Weight Training, and the other is Reliving 1970s Old School Football.
Hot damn, it's another great gridiron day, because in this episode, we discuss the birth anniversary of a lady important to NFL broadcasting. The world football is on fire. Grambling launches a tank and remembering those Hall of Fame greats on their date of birth. And it's all coming up in just one moment. This is the Pigskin Daily History Dispatch, a podcast that covers the anniversaries of American football events throughout history on a day-to-day basis. This is your host, Darren Hayes, and we are podcasting from America's North Shore, bringing you the memories of the gridiron, one day at a time. So in taking the snap from the sportshistorynetwork.com and handing off to pigskindispatch.com, let's go no huddle through today's football history headlines.
This podcast is part of the Sports History Network, your headquarters for the yesteryear of your favorite sport. You can learn more at sportshistorynetwork.com.
Hello, my football friends. This is Darren Hayes of pigskindispatch.com, and welcome once again to the Pigpen for another exciting day of great gridiron history as we do it one day at a time, and June 25th is our date of topic today, and we have some great history for you. And we're going to start off with our newspapers.com football history headline of the day, and it's from the June 26, 1951 St. Louis Post-Dispatch when they printed this great headline, Godfrey in color television debut. Yes, on June 25th, 1951, the first color television broadcast took place in New York City by CBS to four other cities of the Arthur Godfrey Show. CBS sold commercial airtime at $1,000 per minute, an almost laughable price now, but at the time that was super expensive. Yet seven sponsors paid the price and advertised their wares to the audience, estimated at over 40,000 people. Color TVs would not be available for months to the public to buy, but there were about 1,000 home-built or home-converted sets in the New York City area alone. The Columbia Broadcasting System's style of color television became the accepted one after CBS won in a court dispute over RCA Victor. Where would we be without color TV for football games? That's what I want to know. And I want you to know, if you want to be able to read through some old articles like the St. Louis Post-Dispatch like we just did, you need to check out newspapers.com. At newspapers.com, you get access to over 640 million pages worth of news from the U.S., Canada, England, Scotland, Ireland, and more, dating all the way back to 1798 to yesterday. Get a free one-week subscription to newspapers.com by visiting sportshistorynetwork.com/newspapers. And with a paid subscription, you'll also be helping to support the production of this and other great Sports History Network shows. That's sportshistorynetwork.com/newspapers today. Get those free 7 days, and I think you're going to love it. June 25th, year 2000, the Rhine Fire of the NFL Europe won their second World Bowl championship in 3 years. The league's inaugural season was in 1991, and it lasted through the 2007 season when the NFL finally dissolved that league. And hopefully maybe they'll bring that one back someday too. June 25th, 2020, the NFL announced that the 2020 Hall of Fame game, which would have matched the Steelers and the Cowboys in a preseason, would be postponed until 2021 due to COVID-19 concerns. Likewise, the 2020 Pro Football Hall of Fame enshrinement ceremony would also be postponed until the summer of 2021. Now, we put a little bit of a bonus thing today because I found a really interesting picture from the November 25th, 1922 newspaper that was in the Topeka State Journal, Topeka, Kansas. And it was an advertisement of a local high school game. And it's really interesting because they have a great artist. I'm not even sure what the gentleman's name is or lady, whoever drew it. It's Topeka and Lawrence High Schools were playing that day on November 25th, 1922. And they have a photograph, or not even a photograph, a hand drawing of a player from each team in full pads of the era. And it's really interesting to look at. Make sure you check that out, pigskindispatch.com, for the June 25th segment. And look right below the football history headlines, right before you get to the Hall of Fame birthdays. And you'll find it quite interesting, I'm sure. Now, speaking of those Hall of Fame birthdays, let's go right at it. In June 25th, 1928, in Grambling, Louisiana, the Stork visited a Younger home on this day as Paul Tank Younger, the great Grambling fullback slash linebacker from 1945 to 1948, arrived on the scene. The National Football Foundation has a great bio on Paul, where they said this legend started out as a tackle, but the wise old coach, Eddie Robinson, recognized that his player's athleticism would best be suited as a playmaker. Younger earned the nickname Tank by running over everything that got in front of him. Tank was the Tigers' leader on offense and defense. As a freshman, he led the nation in scoring with 25 touchdowns, scoring many times on end-around plays. In his junior year, he rushed for 1,207 yards and scored 18 touchdowns. Younger also completed 43 of 73 pass attempts, for 11 of those were for TDs. His career totals showed 60 touchdowns, which at the time was a collegiate record. After his senior season, he was named the Black College Football's Player of the Year. Paul Younger's collegiate football records are celebrated in the College Football Hall of Fame after his induction in the year 2000. And the talent of this great player did not stop when he finished college. No, Tank played in the NFL for the LA Rams and the Pittsburgh Steelers, earning a trip to the Pro Bowl in five different seasons during his pro career. When he hung up his cleats, he became the National Football League's first African-American assistant general manager. That's quite an accomplishment, but something I really had to take a double take. Okay, now Paul Tank Younger played from 1945 to 1948, and I just read, Eddie Robinson was his coach. Now, think about the career of Eddie Robinson. You know, we've talked about him before. I had to go back and look it up again, but he coached Grambling in 1941 and 1942, and then he returned in 1945 and stayed there all the way to 1997. Seems just like yesterday that Eddie Robinson was still coaching at Grambling, but it's been, you know, almost 25 years now. But what a long career. The 1940s, you know, 41, 42, and then 45, all the way to 1997. That is just amazing and outstanding. And it shows what a great man and iron will he had to teach those young students at Grambling to play the game of football and to have great players like Paul Tank Younger. And we're glad we could share that with you today. Let's go to another birthday. June 25th, 1964, Norristown, Pennsylvania. Boston College's defensive tackle from 1982 to 1985, Mike Ruth, was born. The NFF informs us that Ruth was an Outland Trophy winner in 1985, and he was also a consensus first-team All-American as a senior. Mike led the Eagles to three bowl games, including a win in the 1985 Cotton Bowl game against Houston. Boston College would finish the 1984 season in stellar fashion, as they were ranked fifth nationally in the polls. Ruth amassed 344 career tackles, 29 sacks, 7 forced fumbles, and 3 fumble recoveries during his remarkable career. In 1986, he received Boston College's highest athletic honor when he was named the Eagle of the Year. Mike Ruth was honored with induction into the College Football Hall of Fame in 2017 after the National Football Foundation tabulated up their votes. The big defensive tackle was drafted in the second round of the 1986 NFL Draft by the New England Patriots, and he spent 2 seasons with the franchise. He also spent 2 seasons with the Barcelona Dragons in the World League of American Football. Now, we have another notable gridiron-related birthday, not a Hall of Famer, though she probably is maybe in a broadcast Hall of Fame. We'll have to check that out later. But June 25th, 1949, Phyllis George broke the barrier in sports journalism by becoming the first woman to co-anchor the NFL Today on CBS. For more on this great lady of the gridiron airwaves, please take a moment to read our Phyllis George special post that we actually put up last year on this date, but we want you to make sure you check that out. You can find the link on our June 25th edition of the Football History Headlines, or you can go up top and you can go to our Inspiration Sensations section, and you will see the title First Lady of Football Journalism. That's on Phyllis George. And just to read a little bit of excerpt on her, because it's her birthday, you know, Phyllis George was born on June 25th, 1949, Denton, Texas, and as a youth, she trained as a classical pianist. She was proud of where she came from, as evident in a 1985 interview when she said, "I am from Denton, Texas, and I will never let you or anybody else forget that. I'm a small town girl from a small town and a small town family. And if I had hadn't come from Denton, I wouldn't be sitting here right now with this great job and my great husband and my beautiful children. Now, she was just fantastic. Of course, her husband was a former governor of Kentucky, John Y. Brown. The couple married in 1979, even though they later divorced in 98, but not before raising two children who were born and the family lived in the governor's mansion. And just a remarkable story. First woman to co-anchor a football show. And that's amazing all by itself. And now look what the doors it's opened for all the women in football today, both on ESPN and CBS and NBC and Fox and NFL Network. Just opened up a lot of doors for women inside line reporting and, some of them in the booth, and had some great things happening with women in sports. And it's really added another great dimension to the game of football. And we're glad that Phyllis George was the one to open those doors, because what a beautiful woman, beautiful person, and a great knowledge of the game. She did some great interviews with some players back in the 70s and 80s when she was with CBS. And we sadly miss her. We lost her back May 16th, 2020. And she fought a disease that ended up taking her life. But what a beautiful person, and what contributions she made to a lot of things, but especially in the world of sports journalism on the NFL. So, great time. We're glad you could join us today for this action-packed day of football history. Hope you'll join us again tomorrow. We appreciate you. We appreciate your listenership and your time that you spend with us. And we also invite you to check out pigskindispatch.com. We told you about the Phyllis George article. That's under our Inspiration Sensations. We have our football history headlines, which we do give to you each and every day. And we have a lot of great things on there, including our football funnies. Pigskindispatch.com every Sunday. Football funnies. Get a little bit of a laugh, comics that are football oriented and geared to that gridiron mind. And we hope you enjoy that and are having a good time with it, because we sure are having a great time presenting those to you. Also, find us at sportshistorynetwork.com, where I have about 18, 19 other buddies over there that are just working their butts off every day, bringing you some great sports history podcasts. It is truly becoming the headquarters of sports yesteryear. Just really excited this week. Just got back from a trip to Dallas, visited some family down there. Got to go see Jerry's World. We're going to talk more about that as the year goes on here, but what a fabulous stadium that the Dallas Cowboys AT&T Stadium is. Not a Cowboys fan, but man, that is just one work of art. And Jerry Jones, you got to give him and his family some credit. They really put a lot of thought into that stadium to give it the creature comforts that it is. It's really a pretty cool place. If you ever get the opportunity to take a tour of it, I strongly suggest that you do that. It's worth every penny, and you get to see everything in the stadium. It's really pretty cool. Also got to see the Cotton Bowl. It's just the outside of the Cotton Bowl. A lot of things around Dallas. Had a great time with family and friends, and hope to do that again real soon. And this Saturday, heading out to the Pro Football Hall of Fame to see some of my friends in the PFRA, including some of your fellow podcasters on the Sports History Network. I know Joe Ziemba will be out there, and Dan Newman, just to name a couple. And we're going to have some great times out there. We're going to get to meet face-to-face with these guys and have some good times. So hopefully we'll bring some more stories and some great new photographs to you on Pigskin Dispatch. I know we got some of Jerry's World down in Dallas, and we'll get some from Canton as well. Yeah, just to color your life with a little bit of football and put that great football history and information on pigskindispatch.com. So until tomorrow, everybody, have a great gridiron day.
That's all the football history we have today, folks. Join us back tomorrow for more of your football history. We invite you to check out our website, pigskindispatch.com, not only to see the daily football history, but to experience positive football with our many articles on the good people of the game, as well as our own football comic strip, Cleat Marks Comics. Pigskindispatch.com is also on social media outlets, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and don't forget the Pigskin Dispatch YouTube channel to get all of your positive football news and history. Special thanks to the talents of Mike and Gene Monroe, as well as Jason Neff, for letting us use their music during our podcast.
This podcast is part of the Sports History Network, your headquarters for the yesteryear of your favorite sport. You can learn more at sportshistorynetwork.com.
Hey there, football fans. This is Ross, the host of the Pigskin Tales podcast. I just need a few moments of your time to talk about the host of the Pigskin Dispatch podcast, Darren Hayes. He's expanded the Pigpen to search out information on the history of all team sports. It's a quest to find out about the competitors, teams, and places chronicled throughout athletic history through the uniforms and gear the participants used and wore. And he is taking you, the listener, with him on this educational journey to preserve sports history on the Sports Jersey Dispatch, found here on the Sports History Network. His newest podcast, called Jersey Dispatch, is all based on the jerseys that all the greats used to wear. You can find Darren Hayes and the Pigskin Dispatch podcast, as well as Jersey Dispatch, on your favorite podcast provider multiple times each week. So remember that, Darren Hayes, the host of the Pigskin Dispatch and Jersey Dispatch podcasts. It's found right here on the Sports History Network.